The Disney Brit Podcast is sponsored by Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. At Attraction Tickets Direct, they recognise that people nowadays want to be free from package holiday restrictions and to avoid paying prices inflated by travel agent commission. Because they don't sell through travel agents, they are able to offer attraction tickets at unbeatable prices and offer expert advice. Furthermore, the service they provide is second to none since their lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive their tickets within 7 days and there are no hidden extras such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. You can call them on 0800 975 0002 or visit www.attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk. Complete Orlando are here to help simplify your Orlando holiday. They specialise solely in arranging holidays to Orlando and can therefore provide you with an expert advice and knowledge on this magical destination. They have expert staff available 7 days a week and can personalise your whole itinerary using their range of hotels, private villas and apartments to suit all budgets, as well as car rental, scheduled flights, theme park tickets and travel insurance. Their whole range can be totally tailor-made to offer complete flexibility and fit your individual requirements. Call them on 0800 294 8844 or visit www.completeorlando.co.uk.
Ah, salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday the 9th of December 2009. We have a slightly different show for you this time, as I always will bring you some Disney Brit news and rumours. It's just going to be me this time, and also, you know, the news is just really going to be Disneyland Paris with some observations of things I saw while I was out at Mouse Meets. Then we're going to bring you the first event from Mouse Meets that we did out there, which was the Phantom Manor History Walk. We're going to bring you all the bits and pieces of audio from that, so you can enjoy that along with everybody who was there. We're then going to bring you the next edition of the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz, and it's going to be a special edition from Mouse Meets. And then we're going to bring you some Disney Daily Diary audio from our trip in Walt Disney World in the summer. And really, that is going to end the whole show. Reasonably short one this time, but we hope you enjoy it nonetheless. So, without any further ado, let's get on with this edition of the Disney Brit Podcast.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Welcome to the news and rumours for this edition of the show. As I've already said, it's just going to be me this time, as I'm recording this slightly late due to coming back late from Mouse Meets. Very, very busy at work at the moment, and my car breaking down with a combination of all of those things. The show's running slightly late. I apologise for my voice as well. I do have a bit of a cold, so that doesn't help either. But what I wanted to do is just really talk to you with regards to the things that happened out at Mouse Meets, some of the observations we made, and also some information to do with Disneyland Resort Paris that we picked up and found out while we were out there. First off, I need to make an apology. For those of you who tried to download episode 29 of the podcast, there was an issue with our host server, and it seems that there's some things that have been lost. Episode 29 has suddenly disappeared from the feed. I am going to be trying to put that up over the next week, so if you've not heard 29 yet, please do hold out for that, and that will begin to appear, as will some of the others that are missing. But hopefully you've got this show, no problem whatsoever. Well, Mouse Meets then. Thanks to everyone who attended Mouse Meets 09. We certainly did have a great time together. And the event, you know, ran pretty smoothly considering it was the first one that had ever really been done. We thought, you know, it went really, really well. Thank you to all those people, as I said, for coming. Well done to Gillian Britton, who took the Disney Brit Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast crown from me. She won with a score, I think it was around 430,000 points. So that was pretty impressive. So Gillian won herself a prize for doing that. So well done to you. A huge thank you, I think, has to go out to Disney for their fantastic support with the event. It really was great to have them on board and have the little touches they added. And again, we want to thank all the sponsors for the event, Attraction Tickets Direct, and also Touring Plans and Mouse Fan Travel. All of you guys, you know, thanks again. The event really couldn't have happened without you. So, with Mouse Meets 2009 over, that leaves me with nothing else to do other than announce the date for 2010. Now, I've already said 2010 is indeed going to be in the UK, and it's going to be held in the city of Manchester. It's going to be held at the Manchester Conference Centre, and the date is going to be the 1st and 2nd of May 2010. That is the Saturday and Sunday of the first May bank holiday, so do come out and join us. We're going to have a great time out there. It's going to be a slightly different format to what we had this year in Disneyland Paris, just because of obviously the venue and not being in the theme parks. Ticket information will be following very, very shortly. We're just finalising details about that. Once we get them, we can let you know. If you are interested and you have not registered your interest yet, you can go over to our new website for the event, which is www.mousemeets.co.uk, and you can sign up there, and we will be releasing our very, very first newsletter very soon. So please do go over there and sign up. Walt Disney World news, not really a huge amount come out. To be honest, nothing really worthy of reporting for us Brits, just some bits and pieces to do with Christmas Day taping parade, things to do with the change in narration for the candlelight procession, all those sort of things, really. Nothing major. So what I want to talk to you now, really, is about some of the observations I've saw while I was over at Disneyland Resort Paris over the past weekend, things that I sort of found out. Firstly, the park seemed to be very, very busy. It's obviously getting busier and busier over there, especially with the Christmas season. Queues were really, really high during our trip. We were looking at 100 to 120 minutes for Big Thunder Mountain. Space Mountain was easily breaking the 100 minute barrier most times. 75, 80 to 90 minutes for Peter Pan as well. So it really, really was very busy. But Pirates of the Caribbean, we had an event where we were going to do a group ride of pirates, and we went over there, and according to the sign that the cast members are having to write, the wait time was 80 minutes. The wait time board, I think, only goes up to 50 minutes for pirates, but they actually had slips of paper. They were writing wait times on and slotting them in, and I looked at the queue and thought, 80 minutes, never for pirates. And actually, it turned out that it was only 35 minutes, and by the time we got off the ride, it was still only just over 45 minutes. So do think about pirates. If you go over there and it says an 80-minute wait, the likelihood is it probably isn't. And we queued through pretty much the entire queuing system there as well. So, you know, it was very busy, but sometimes maybe it's not quite right. We talked about on the news these new festive treats that were supposed to be released for the winter season. There was the cookies and the toffee apples and the popcorn on a stick that they'd got a very famous French chef to come in and sort for them. We just couldn't seem to see them. We were hoping to do some sort of taste review for it, but just couldn't find them anywhere. So if anybody has seen them, please do let us know, because we'd be really interested in reviewing those. Walt Disney Studios had extra magic hours. It's going to be happening a couple of weekends again over December. You can find out on their website exact dates. Unfortunately, off the top of my head, I don't remember what they are. But it does seem to be proving quite a big success. It's not particularly rammed in the park, but it did mean, because we were staying in a Disney hotel, we had the opportunity to get on Crush's coaster with only a 15-minute wait, which is very, very rare that that happens. Even first thing in the morning, if you arrive at the park ready for opening, the 15-minute wait does not last long. It was 15-minute wait when we went in. When we came out 15 minutes later, it was already at a 75 minute wait. So it really is well worth those extra magic hours at Disney Studios to continue to do those. Animagique, those of you who've seen Animagique, which is sort of the black light theatre show, since they've added some new projections to that, the projections are pretty minimal throughout, except for there are bubbles now that project on the front screen when they do the Little Mermaid section. It added quite a nice touch to it, another nice little element there. Something else I discovered that I didn't realise is I had a bit of a headache on the Saturday evening, so I went to City Hall to ask where I bought paracetamol from, And they explained to me, you don't have to buy paracetamol. If you go out to the first aid location, it can be in either park, they provide you with paracetamol free of charge. And I had no idea about this. So that's just a little tip to let you know about, because I didn't know at all. So that's just something else to tell you about. Over in Walt Disney Studios, the Toy Story Playland seems to be coming on very, very well. The sort of army base of which we believe is going to be the one of the part of the queue for the Green Army Men parachute drop is coming under coming on well. They've moved the benches from in front of the hoarding now that we climbed up on last time to have a look over. But from what we've seen, it seems that that's progressing extremely well. And also, we went into Blockbuster Cafe. We've not been in there before. And, you know, I really liked it. We sat over in the Pirates of the Caribbean area, which was great. They also had the High School Musical stuff over there as well, which was looking really good. Some of the markings on the floor, because the idea is a basketball court as you enter Blockbuster Cafe, some of the markings on that floor start to come up. But there was also a really great little band, sort of jazz, sort of New Orleans-y style band that was there. I'm going to play some audio from that at the end of this segment. So that was some really good stuff. But overall, you know, really good trip had by all, and some really interesting things that we discovered. Okay, I have got some news for you, though, that I want to let you know about. And we'll start off to do with Disney hotels, and that is there is a new room grading at the Value Resorts. At the Hotel Cheyenne, there is now the Rio Grande Room and the Buffalo Rooms. The Rio Grande Room guarantees a location along the tranquil Rio Grande River that runs between the two hotels. It also gets you close to the park and Disney Village path in the morning and for the, in the morning and the evening. The Buffalo Rooms are located near the main reception, restaurant, bar and shop, and so you are close to all facilities, particularly your breakfast. Supplements are from £7 to £16 per night, depending on the season. Now, at the Disney's Hotel Santa Fe, you've got the Rio Grande Rooms and the El Dorado Rooms. The Rio Grande Rooms, exactly the same as at Hotel Cheyenne. The El Dorado Rooms, again, are exactly the same, except for they are in the Santa Fe rather than in the Hotel Cheyenne. Again, £7 to £16 supplement per night, depending on the season. There is also, over at Davy Crockett Ranch, a premium two-bed cabin. Sleeps up to six people with a double bed and four single beds. It's air-conditioned. There's two shower rooms, a private terrace with barbecue, and walking distance from the Davy Crockett Ranch Village. The supplement for that is from the £21 to £29 per night, depending on season. Now, these premium two-bed cabins are becoming available from next season, starting the 2nd of April 2010. Now, the previous two-bed cabin option appears to still be remaining, and there's now listed as a supplement to the side of the one-bedroom cabin. So, if you are thinking about going after April, do consider that there. Well, let's head into the parks then. Over in the Disneyland Park, it seems there's rumours that, although we're getting Toy Story Playland, they are thinking about making over Pizza Planet at the back of Discoveryland. The rumours are it's going to undergo some sort of transformation. It's believed that the interior will be given an update, possibly to tie in with the New Generation Festival and also Toy Story 3. There is also rumours that the menu will get an overhaul with a price set price of around €15. Although this is possibly going to include a possible new resort-wide initiative, which is refillable drinks. Hopefully there'll be more to follow on that. Another exciting opportunity over at Walt Disney Studios, this I heard, I was really, really intrigued when I heard it, is that there's a new tour coming specifically for the Tower of Terror. Now, starting on the 19th of December, a new tour is going to begin in the Twilight Zone. The one-hour tour allows guests access to the tower as never before and will happen before park hours. The cost is €9.60 and is limited to only 10 people per tour. You will need a park ticket or annual pass to take part, and restriction is on a minimal height to ride rather than a minimal age. Does sound a really, really interesting prospect. It's only on Saturdays. Unfortunately, I've missed it, and when I go back for New Year, I'll miss it then as well, as we're not there on a Saturday. But it's going to be before park hours. You meet outside of the park and you're taken in. I think it starts somewhere around 9:15. So it's obviously going to be when the park is open, slightly later at 10 a.m. Sorry. If you want to know more information, it's available at City Hall, Studio Services, or by calling 33016474216, and you can also inquire via email at dlp.relations.vip@disney.com. final thing then, that is the Disneyland Resort Paris Shareholders Round Table event that's happening. It's happening over a few sessions. The next one is going to be Friday, December the 11th. And basically, members of the Shareholders Club are being invited to participate in an informal meet and greet. There'll be question and answer sessions with Philippe Gass, CEO of the resort, and Greg Richard, who is Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer of Euro Disney SAS. It's an opportunity to meet and discuss with them news and events regarding the company's financial performance, as well, and this is the most interesting bit, as well as future projects. Now, there are three sessions being organised between December and February. The first session is December the 11th. It's at 6 p.m., so this Friday, 6 p.m. at Disney's Newport Bay Club. If you are going or are thinking of going to the what looks like one in January and one in February, please let us know. We'd really, really like to speak to you to find out the information that you find out from that. Email us at disneybrit@hotmail.com. We really, really would be interested to hear what they've got to say with regards to the future, with regards to Playland, the 20th anniversary, all that sort of stuff. If you can let us know, that'd be great. As I said earlier, we're in the Blockbuster Cafe, went there for lunch on the Sunday of Mouse Meets, and while we were there, the live sort of New Orleans style jazz band started to play. So what I'm going to play for you now to play out this section of the show is one of the pieces of music that they provided for us while we were enjoying our lunch. Meets where we are going to go on a tour of Phantom Manor. I've got everybody here with me. So we're really just going to talk about Frontierland. We're going to talk about Phantom Manor and how Frontierland and Phantom Manor fit together. You can probably hear Big Thunder Mountain in the background if we're stood here directly opposite the entrance to Phantom Manor. So let me tell you a little bit more. Now, before we start, I need to let you know that for this tour of Phantom Manor, this walking history walk, Miss Ravenswood is going to be referred to as the Bride.
Okay, there's no such name really has been given to her officially. Although many since have sort of called her Melanie, there is no evidence to say this is actually her real name. And there's sort of a discrepancy which I'll reveal a little bit later in the tour. So, here we are stood in the American Wild Wild West, where many, many years ago, this small, peaceful valley had laid within the shadow of Big Thunder Mountain. Now, the river that ran through this area had broken up the land, leaving these small little islands, except for one really big island that was in the centre that jutted right out, that of Big Thunder Mountain. Now, ancient tribes lived here way before anybody else, and they told this story of a powerful spirit that used to protect the mountain from wrongdoers. And it was known as the Thunderbird, and it was said that a flap of its mighty wings would cause the earth to tremble and open up, removing the mountain from the landscape forever, destroying the valley. But for years, this spirit was respected. No one would dare venture anywhere near the mountain, wouldn't go into the caves, anything like that. Until one day. One day when settlers arrived in the area and began to explore. Now, they went in search of precious jewels and minerals and were too greedy to heed the warnings of any of the natives whatsoever. Now, eventually, the search proved successful. Settlers struck gold in the heart of Big Thunder Mountain, and as word got out, more and more settlers started to arrive in the area. More and more people set up businesses, set up homes here, and they began to excavate large parts of the mountain. This once very serene valley then became a really quite loud, bustling wilderness town, really a gold rush town. Now, by now, it is 1849, and the town has been given its name and is officially known as Thunder Mesa. And as the years passed, railroad tracks were built, a riverboat began to regularly go around the river, which was around Thunder Mountain, bringing people to the area. And this would really begin to show the town's fortune. Now, although there are many, many people that lived in Thunder Mesa, only one man owned the mine, the Thunder Mine. His name was Henry Ravenswood. He was an industrial tycoon, and he established the Big Thunder Mining Company to help increase the mining operation and to help sort of spread all the stuff that happened within the mine, to sort of spread it out and really to take advantage of everything that was there. Now, Ravenswood wanted to keep a real close eye on what happened on the mountain. And there was only one real way he could do that. And that was by building himself a house. A house so close to the mountain that he was able to watch what was going on without even having to leave it. And on the banks of the river, right opposite Big Thunder Mountain, he built Ravenswood Manor. Now, Ravenswood Manor was a beautiful, beautiful house. A place where his family could live. The four stories. So the house was painted white, had a great red gabled roof, and the manor stood within these beautifully crafted gardens that sort of contained countless marble statues as well as statues that were wood and copper. Now, to the west of the manor stood the family cemetery, of which is still there today. Now, once the manor was finished, it became the pride of the town, and many people tried to build equally impressive buildings in this area. Some people tried very hard, did very well, but never really lived up to the standard of Ravenswood Manor. But the owner's real pride and joy was not his manor house, nor was it his mine, nor money, nor was it his mass amount of wealth, but it was his daughter, the bride Ravenswood. This girl had a fair complexion and auburn hair, and she was allowed to spend her days roaming the gardens and living within this expansive house. But she was always, always under the watchful eye of her father, Henry. Now, for a time, things were going really well in Thunder Mesa. A showgirl known as Diamond Lil gained possession of an enormous gold nugget with the wealth she'd gained, and Lil opened a place called the Lucky Nugget, a saloon and dance hall, which you can find a little bit further down in Frontierland. Now, the wealthy elite ate at the nearby Silver Spur Steakhouse, which is obviously a restaurant, and even Undertaker Jay Nutterville couldn't really complain too much about business. But that certainly was going to get a lot better for him, because all the good fortune changed as the bride Ravenswood began to prepare for celebrating her wedding. Now, it is now 1860, 11 years after the first settlers started to dig, and the tribal spirit, it seemed, had finally had enough. A huge quake struck Thunder Mesa, collapsing most of the mine and taking thousands upon thousands of lives, including Henry Ravenswood and and his wife, Martha. But before this tragic event, it seemed that trouble had actually been brewing within the Ravenswood family. You see, rumours had it the bride's suitor had said that he was planning on taking her away from Thundermesser. Now, Henry was apparently furious about this, but before he could do anything, he died. There's nothing he could do. Or could he? Now, the day of the wedding arrived. The bride, in her wedding dress, in her finery, went in search of her groom, but he was nowhere to be seen. She searched the gardens, the halls, and the room, but to no avail. Heartbroken, it was believed that she shut herself away in the house and never came out. But through the windows, people could see her roam the halls in her wedding dress. She had a candelabra in her hand. Some say that she was waiting for her love to return. Some believe that maybe she was kept in the house by some evil spirit. But she never, ever found her suitor. Now, the rumours soon started to spread that Henry Ravenswood had somehow miraculously returned from the dead to prevent this wedding from happening. Now, many night walkers reported an eerie figure looking out of a window of the manor, while others reported the sound of manic laughter coming from the manor gardens. Over the years, the manor began to fall into decay. No one would dare go in there. No one would come out because there was no one in there to be living there anymore. And the residents of Thundermesser became too scared to set foot inside. Those who did set inside were rumoured never to have come out again, so the stories say. Locals nicknamed Ravenswood Manor Phantom Manor. Now, after the effects of the 1860 earthquake, it meant that really this gold rush town was dead and buried, never really returned. Attempts to retrieve the gold were left, but it really became far too dangerous. Now, without the risk of more settlers arriving to get rich quick, Thundermesser regained some of its peace. The riverboat would still travel, some of the trains would still run, but farmers moved into the other end of Thundermesser, and there they set up Cottonwood Creek. So, let's look a little bit more about Phantom Manor itself. The manor contains 92 audio animatronic characters. There's 54 animated props, 58 individual special effects, and more than 400 special show props, making it one of the most elaborate attractions ever created for a Disney theme park. The unique music you will hear on the tour of the Phantom Manor was actually created by principal performers from the London Chamber Orchestra, and were supplemented by around 60 of the best, finest musicians in London. Rhythms range from the gloomy funeral march to a ballroom waltz to a honky-tonk saloon piano version, and ultimately to a rollicking vocal rendition by a quartet of singing statues. Okay, so the ride through Phantom Manor is provided by Doom Buggies, as you probably know, two passenger carriages of the continuously moving Wedway Omnimover transportation system developed by Walt Disney Imagineering. Each of the 131 cars that there are capable of rotating up to 180 degrees left and right, so really giving them a 360 degree turn, and are pre-programmed to turn in the direction of each of the scenes that you're going to see on the attraction. The musical skeletons found in the skeleton catacombs were inspired by the 1929 Disney short animated film, The Skeleton Dance, and the film produced in black and white, and it was the first Silly Symphony. The ride opened the 12th of April 1992 and lasts approximately 7 minutes. Okay, let's head up to the main entrance gate and let's talk to you a little bit more about how Phantom Manor came to be as it is. So, in 1984, the plans for the resort were underway, and Imagineer Tony Baxter was given the job of really reimagining the attraction from the old Disney favourite that we find in Orlando and we find in Disneyland. And the original was created by Claude Coates and Mark Davis, and it was named the Haunted Mansion. So he led this creative team into creating a ride for European audience. French officials had turned around and said that they were not interested in a replica for the park, but something new and different that would translate well to a French park. It was only now that Imagineer Ken Anderson's original vision came to life. At the time of creating the original mansion for Disneyland, Walt Disney gave Ken Anderson the job of designing the exterior of the building and giving it some sort of story. And Ken came up with this idea that he would locate it within the southwest corner of Frontierland, and this idea was that it would be a very run-down, old-looking, scary mansion. Everyone loved the idea, except for Walt, who famously said, "We'll take care of the outside and let the ghosts take care of the inside." And from that point, every Phantom or every Haunted Mansion had a pristine look on the outside. So, the question you ask is, why was it placed in Frontierland over here in Disneyland Paris? Well, firstly, it was the space that was available. Secondly, it was applicable. Main Street USA was already cluttered with many, many buildings. Disneyland Paris has no New Orleans or Liberty Square, so there's no reason to put it there. And there's no real reason to put a Gothic mansion within Adventureland. Fantasyland didn't work because there's no real cultural relevance like there is over in some of the Asian parks. So it was really Frontierland the only place that it could possibly go to. Discoveryland, of course, was also just very futuristic Jules Verne style. Jules Verne really wasn't into any of his sort of scary stories. So it turns out that the idea of placing this Gothic building in Frontierland worked well. Now, Gothic-style buildings are a mainstay in France, and people saw them every day. So to have created one that looked like an ordinary sort of manor house wouldn't really make any sense. People wouldn't really see any magic in it whatsoever. So it had to be changed. But there was also one other reason for the change, and it was this. Not only will people from France be coming, but also people from Germany, Spain, Portugal, Holland, the UK, and they all needed to be able to understand the story of the Phantom Manor. Now, it would have been unfeasible, really, for them to have done it all through speech, because, well, not everybody speaks the same language. So instead, they decided they would have to use a lot of visuals to tell the story. So, some of those we will find out a little bit later in the tour. So, as well as the look and story of the mansion being given an overhaul, so did the music. Film composer John Debney, who has done Chicken Little, Bruce Almighty, Hannah Montana the movie, etc., took the original version of the score and added orchestral sounds. Some of the original music can still be heard in the attraction, especially in the music box. Also, there's the honky-tonk piano that you hear within Phantom Canyon as well, in that saloon. Even the Phantom was given a familiar laugh. The cackle heard at the end of Michael Jackson's Thriller. Well, who created that cackle at the end? It was a man named Vincent Price, famous horror movie actor. And he became the Phantom. Disney spoke to him, asked him whether he would be able to come and do it, and he said yes. And they came in and he recorded some of the minimal narration that you hear the ghost host speak in this version of the attraction.
Where hinges creak in doorless chambers, where strange and frightening sounds echo through the halls, where candlelights flicker though the air is deathly still, this is Phantom Manor.
This was to be short-lived, as French operators requested that the narration, although it be minimal, to be done in French. You can still hear some of Vincent Price. He's still there's sort of recordings around of him. But Vincent Price was sort of given the boot, so to speak, and French actor Gerard Chevalier was brought in and has been in ever since, really. But don't worry, Vincent Price can still be heard. You can still hear his laugh as the Phantom as you travel through the attraction. Now, another actress, Una Lind, recorded the voice of Madame Leota and also the famous Hurry Back line in the Walt Disney World version. Hurry Back line is supposedly said by the Little Bride, a version of the Bride, and not, sorry, it's supposed to be said by Little Leota. In this version, it is actually the Bride that supposedly said the line. Okay, so let's head over towards the actual main entrance to the attraction itself, and I want to show you something on the sign. Now, the sign for Phantom Manor has also got that worn-down look, but you'll find there's an inscription underneath. Now, early concepts said that the motto on the actual sign itself was going to be Nulla Fides Frontis, which roughly translates in Latin as no fortune to those who trust appearances. But eventually they changed the idea to Non Omnis Moriar, which means I shall not completely die. So, I shall not completely die again fits in very well with the story that we've heard so far. Okay, let's enter through those gates. We're going to go down into the front carriageway area of the manor house. And you can see here, quite a big area. This was supposedly the carriageway for the manor house, an area which the horse-drawn carriages could come up and bring guests. The garden, as you can see, is not quite in the pristine condition it used to be. It's now very overgrown. And those marble statues that were once glistening have now become quite broken and quite dishevelled. The front door is really interesting. interesting because this is the only haunted house within a Walt Disney theme park of which you enter through the main front door. In Tokyo and in Florida, you enter both through the servants' quarters, which is way below the front door. And in California, you actually enter through a side entrance instead. Now, another interesting thing to point out is that above the front door. Now, we've already talked about that the manor's history and its residence. We know that the bride, Ravenswood, was said to have wandered the halls. It seems that she has actually stopped for a little while and is looking out. Look up above the mansion doorway, and you can see the bride standing looking down at all the guests that enter the manor. Look at the centre window, and you should be able to see her for yourself. To pass up the steps as we go through the queue, and you can see to the right of you, as the queue is out at the moment, is that small gazebo. That gazebo is there still, looking like it's standing ready for afternoon tea, and you can hear the sound of a music box if you listen really, really carefully. So, you know, who's this music box? We don't really know. Maybe it belongs to the bride, or why have they left a cup and a teapot there? Maybe they left in a hurry, or it is possible that maybe they were enjoying an afternoon drink where that mysterious earthquake hit. With the fact that Henry Ravenswood and his wife Martha died in it, maybe they were much safer in there than they were trapped inside the house. But there we have that, and we're going to walk up now. We're going to walk up to basically the pavilion queue area, something like an outdoor pavilion area. And when you go in, have a really good listen. You've still got those sounds of the wind, and you can hear it whispering through. It's the motionless fountain in the centre, quite an ornate fountain that's really starting to turn quite old. The water inside looks quite mouldy, I suppose. I suppose it's designed to be like that. And it is seen, really, from days gone by, but maybe there was some sort of celebration in here. It certainly looks like it could have been. You can also hear the sound of shutters that move eerily in the wind, and we'll come back to that in a little while. If you look carefully, sometimes you'll find that curtains move at the windows. Maybe there's someone still inside the house. Is it the ghost of Henry, or maybe it's even the bride? Well, I'll let you decide, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you enjoy the rest of the queue, I'm going to let you enjoy the stretching room, and then I'm going to give you some more information as we enter the portrait gallery when we get inside the attraction.
Our tour begins here, in this gallery, where you gaze upon the sweet innocence of youth. Ah, but things are not always as they seem. Can it be this room is actually stretching? And notice this. This chamber has no windows and no doors, which offers you this chilling challenge to find a way out. Of course, there is always my way.
They're two different stretching rooms. You were saying that, but they're both identical. There's a slight difference between the two in the fact that the picture of the bride is actually from concept art, so her hair is slightly different. In the one that we've seen there, her hair is a different colour and a slightly different start. It is very, very minimal. If you went into both of them and looked at them, you wouldn't really know. It wouldn't really make any difference. But we're now in the portrait gallery, which in the Walt Disney World version, you actually ride through the portrait gallery, but here they had it as your walkway, and it's actually just the corridor that takes you from the building itself into the show building. Now, you can hear the sound of the bride, okay? You can hear her singing, and that's a motif that comes throughout the ride. Whenever you see the bride, you hear this voice. Now, the voice is done by Catherine Mayering, who was an Imagineer at the time. And you can see right at the end of the corridor is the bride herself. Now, you can hear her singing now, but when the ride first opened, you couldn't hear her singing properly. And this is because of a mistake that was made. The Imagineers put in the speaker system, checked out all the sound and everything, and then the painters and decorators came in, stuck the wallpaper up, and wallpapered over the speaker. And it wasn't until that the Imagineers came in and went, hang on a second, why can't I hear anything? And realised that the speaker couldn't be seen, and they turned the sound up, that you can now actually hear her speaking. Now, all of the things you find on the attraction, all of the antiques are sort of Gothic arts from places like Holland. There's Persian rugs, there's all those sort of stuff. And what they actually went and found all of these things from all of the different countries and brought them into the manor. So, I'm going to let you go and ride Phantom Manor now. Look out for all the things that we spoke about, and then afterwards we're going to just do a quick tour of Boot Hill and explain what all of the gravestones are and why they're there. So we've just come off Phantom Manor, and we're going to take you on a tour now through the Boot Hill, which is really the cemetery for the family. So we're just going to walk down, and I'm just going to explain to everybody about what we're seeing as we're going and make our way through. Well, first off, the first two tombstones that we come to are both wooden. They are both jokes for the Imagineers. One's Dakota Dick, and the other one can't quite make out because of the overgrowth. They've sort of really covered most of that up. But the first one that we come to that's really, really important, one that's actually part of the story, is that of Mary Murphy and Frank Ballard and Mal Ballard. And it says the following. So it says, Mary Murphy, 1837 to 1859 till death. 1829 to 1859, and then do us part. And in the background, it's got Mar Ballard, 1800 to 1859, over my dead body. Now, there's some discrepancy, as we were saying, about the idea of this story, that Mary Murphy could indeed be the bride. Now, she hasn't got the surname Ravenswood, which is possibly one of the reasons why it isn't linked to naturally the word Melanie, or the name Melanie is actually there. But Mary's full name is Mary Murphy Ravenswood, we seem to believe, and Frank Ballard is the young gentleman who was married to her. It shows that they both apparently died at the same time. The story says that Mary was due to marry Frank and leave the family home. Now, when Henry Ravenswood found out, he said that he was would have killed Frank on the spot. Now, just above the couple is Mar Ballard, Frank's mother. She is said to be against the marriage as well, and she said that, you know, they would only let them wed over her dead body. Now, the couple never married, and Mar Ballard, who suffered from osteoporosis, died a few short months after her son. Now, these two gravestones cause some confusion, as I've said, over the Phantom Manor story. It is unclear as to whether the bride's name is Melanie or indeed Mary. It could just be that there's a coincidence that the story is very, very similar. Maybe it has been done because they are trying to mislead everybody, not to completely understand what is going on. But the name Melanie does appear in the attraction, actually during the boudoir scene, in which there are letters on the dresser addressed to Melanie. And in the book, The Haunted Mansion, from the Magic Kingdom to the movie, states her name also as Melanie. But the gravestone here does indeed present a different name. So it could be Mary. Maybe Mary is actually even just a relative of Melanie, and Frank was her suitor. But I'll leave that up to you, really, to make up your own mind. Unfortunately, the Imagineers have never really made it clear. Personally, I think it's Melanie, and Mary maybe is just some sort of family relative or in some way connected. Interesting, they both died 1859, a year before the supposed marriage of Melanie. So some indiscrepancies, definitely. We come along to the next gravestone, which is, again, a sort of an in-joke with the Imagineers, that is the Hole in the Wallet Gang. Now, this gravestone has the name of many Imagineers on it, all of which worked on them. I can't read them clearly enough. My eyesight, unfortunately, is fading me fast. And what we can see here is the Hole in the Wallet Gang, 1992. Now, no one really knows why they named them the Hole in the Wallet Gang, other than we've got the famous Hole in the Wall Gang. I believe that maybe the attraction was overspent, and maybe that's caused the project to overrun or the cost to overrun, and that's why it was the Hole in the Wallet Gang. But it has got the 1992 date on there, date of the park's opening. Move along, a bit closer to us, is B. Arnold. Cold is my bed, but oh, I love it, for colder are my friends above it. Now, the gravestone for B. Arnold is supposedly named after Benedict Arnold, who fought for American independence. And this was during American independence from the British Empire as a general in the Continental Army during the American Revolutionary War. We've then got another joke by the Imagineer, which comes next, which is Leadfoot Pete danced too slow, and now he's dead. It's 1802 to 1866, and that is again believed to be another in-joke with the Imagineers. There's another one, next one along, which, unfortunately, from the top of my head, I really can't remember what the name of it was. It's barn doors, sort of not barn doors, sort of like saloon doors, and one of those doors is actually now missing. And unfortunately, off the top of my head, I can't remember what exactly they are. But we're going to move around a little bit further, and there are four gravestones, all wooden, which are all part of sort of an in-joke, really, with the Imagineers, which is the squirrel, the lion, the bear, and the man. Now, the bear is the most important in this. He is the one who really is overall on this one. The first one says, with the squirrel engraved on it, it's November 13th, 1865, breakfast time. November 13th, 1865, lunchtime. November 13th, 1865, dinner time. And then the last one is November 13th, 18 a.m., 1885. Obviously 20 years later after everybody else, hibernating in happiness after years of hearty hunting. So obviously, maybe the squirrel was for breakfast, the tiger's for lunch, and the hunter was definitely for dinner. So that's the bear. Let's move around a little bit further here. We're coming around. Massive guys towards the back, which can be seen as part of the riverboat cruise. But the next sort of gravestones we come to on our walk round are in fact two very important ones that link the whole thing to the story. At the bottom, there's a plaque that says, "Quarrelled and fought as man and wife, now silent together beyond this life." And they are the graves of Martha Ravenswood, who was born 1802, died 1860, and Henry Ravenswood, born 1795, died 1860. So again, it fits in with the story, the idea of 1860, sorry, when the quake happened, they both died as part of that quake. Got two more gravestones to show you as we come round. The first is within its own sort of iron gated area. They've been broken, these tombs, almost like something's happened to them, so it's cracked with them. And they are man and wife, but they are people who supposedly worked within Phantom Manor, who obviously survived what had happened, because their deaths were in 1866 and 1867. I'll just read you what it says in the gravestone, and I'll let you decide what you think. First is Jasper Jones. He was a loyal manservant, died 1866 and kept the master happy. And the other one is Anna Jones, faithful chambermaid, died 1867 but kept the master happier. And I'll leave you to listen to that one. You can hear the sounds of the man of the wind again. I'll just let you hear some of the sounds. And we're going to come over to one other, which is another sound clue. And this is something I was showing somebody earlier, and nobody really notices it at all. And it wasn't until I put my ear to it that suddenly lots of other people started doing it. And that is of a massive tomb, sort of greeny, greyishy sort of colour, I suppose. It's supposed to have some sort of cloth over the top of it. Fortunately, we can't actually see anything on the top itself. There's actually nothing there. But this is supposedly a sort of a nod to Edgar Allan Poe and the Telltale Heart. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, what do you mean, Edgar Allan Poe and the Telltale Heart? Why would that be there? I don't quite understand what you're on about. But if you put your ear to it and listen very carefully, I'm going to do that now so I can hear it. Yep, it's just beginning to play. You can just hear it faintly in the background, just get stronger. You can hear the sound of a heartbeat from the inside. And it's believed that this is a nod to Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart. Now, many people don't come up to Boot Hill. They don't come up here very often at all. But there's one other really great thing about Boot Hill, that you can see some other things in the manor house you wouldn't necessarily look out for. So we're going to take a wander down. In fact, you can really hear the heartbeat now just as we're going. It's really quite loud, but we're going to keep walking on it anyway. And that's the last few things I want to show you. Firstly, is one of the windows on this side of the mansion. Now, unless you turn back and look, you can't really see this, and you have to look really carefully. If you're walking towards the exit, it's better to take the left path out of Boot Hill than the right, because there's a big tree in the way. But if you look up on the sort of the balcony of the second floor, and look really carefully in the left-hand window, at night, sometimes, not always, but you can see the flicker of a light. And if you look really, really carefully, you can make out the shape of what is possibly the phantom. Who is the phantom? well, the Phantom could indeed be Henry Ravenswood, come back from the dead to kill Melanie Souter. He could just be an evil spirit that possesses the house. Again, we don't really know. But what we do know is that that Phantom is certainly somebody who killed somebody in the stretching room, as we spoke about earlier. One other thing, and this is one thing that very, very few people notice, and I want to show you this because this is one of the eureka moments, or the ah moments, as I like to call them, and that is, if you look at the house itself, and you look at the shutters on the sort of right-hand side as you're looking at the house, watch really, really carefully for the right-hand shutter, because every now and again, it just blows in the wind. And this isn't the actual wind itself that's doing it. This is an imaginary trick. It's just gone there, and it's just going again, and then it goes straight back and rests back down where it was. It's one of those things that not many people notice, but it always happens. Well, there we go. A lengthy, but I hope in-depth look at Phantom Manor. Hope you enjoyed it. I hope to do some more of these again very soon. We're still here at Mouse Meets, and we're going to bring you now the next sort of one of the things that we've been doing out here, which is the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz, and we're bringing you this edition live from Disneyland Paris. So we're going to do it in a slightly different way. We're only going to give you guys at home the questions, not the answers. Not going to give the answers to the next show, but here we go with a special Mouse Meets edition of the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. Okay, then question one for 100 points. Well, actually, let me just quickly explain to everybody how this works. I think everybody knows, but each question, all eight of them, start off easy and get slightly harder. Each are worth so many points. Question one is worth 100 points. Question two, 200. Question three, 300. All the way to question eight, which is worth 800 points, then is the hardest. We're going to combine the scores, find out just how everybody has done, and you guys at home can do that on the next edition. So here we go. Question one for 100 points is this. During the winter, an ice skating rink is located outside which Disneyland Paris hotel? So question one, 100 points. During the winter, an ice skating rink is located outside which Disneyland Paris hotel? Question two then for 200 points is this. In Disneyland Paris, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience is located in which land? So, in Disneyland Paris, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience is located in which land? And if you haven't noticed already, yes, all questions are about Disneyland Paris. Question three, 300 points. How many roller coasters exist in the Disneyland Paris Resort? So, how many roller coasters exist in the Disneyland Paris Resort? Question four, 400 points, is the following. Name the British actor that narrates the studio tram tour Behind the Magic at Walt Disney Studios, Paris. So question four, 400 points. Name the British actor that narrates the studio tram tour Behind the Magic at Walt Disney Studios, Paris. Question 5, 500 points. According to the storyline of Walt Disney Studios' Crush's Coaster, where are you travelling through in the coaster portion of the attraction? So according to the storyline of Walt Disney Studios' Crush's Coaster, where are you travelling through in the coaster portion of the attraction? Question Question 6, 600 points. What is the name of the dragon found underneath Sleeping Beauty's castle? That simple. Question 6, 600 points. What is the name of the dragon found underneath Sleeping Beauty's castle? Question 7. Here we go, 700 points. Outside of Annette's diner in Disney Village is a pink Cadillac. Actually, it's now moved. It's now outside of Planet Hollywood. So what is so special about its number plate? So outside, what used to be outside Annette's diner, now outside Planet Hollywood in Disney Village, is a pink Cadillac. What is so special about its number plate? And finally, question 8 for 800 points. This is the hardest one out of all of them. See how well you do with this. On Disneyland Park's Main Street USA, who is given the title of Consultant at Large World Famous Psychic? So, on Disneyland Park's Main Street USA, who is given the title of Consultant at Large World Famous Psychic? There you go, you guys at home, there is all 8 of your questions. You can, as always, if you think you know the answers, send in your answers to disneybrit@hotmail.com. We'll check through those and we'll give you the answers to the questions and we'll find out who got all 8 right. And we'll get back to you guys on the next edition of the show while we carry on over here. Day 13 of our trip then. We were planning on going to Busch Gardens, but with one thing or another, a member of our party wasn't feeling too well, we didn't want to travel too far. We decided that we'd change our day and go over to Animal Kingdom. We decided to go to Perkins for breakfast. We haven't done that for a few days, so we went and enjoyed a good hearty breakfast there. And then we headed our way over to Animal Kingdom, arrived about 9:30, and it's obvious that the new offer, the Disney Dining Plan, has taken a massive toll on the attendance at the parks. Animal Kingdom was very, very busy. We were looking at long queues for Expedition Everest when we arrived. There were already about 40 to 50 minute wait at that time in the morning. So we got a fast pass for Kilimanjaro Safari. Went off, took my little boy to the Dinoland USA so we can play in the play area. I went off and rode Dinosaur with a few people and then we came back. It was then time for our Expedition Everest. Now, obviously, people use FastPass in one way or another. Some people don't quite understand how to use it. But one of the things I do is before I use my next FastPass, I will always try and go and get a FastPass for the next attraction I want one for. As I said, the attendance was very, very high at Animal Kingdom, which meant that we were unable to get a FastPass for Expedition Everest. And by that point, it was already a 70-minute wait. So, we went off, did Expedition Everest, did a lot of the other stuff in the park. Unfortunately, didn't get to do Everest. We're going to plan to go back and see that again some other time during the holiday. But we did go to Yak and Yeti for lunch. Now, I decided that I didn't want a lot for lunch. I'd only have a little bit for lunch. So I went and had a chicken fried rice. It's actually just a side dish from Yak and Yeti. It's about $3.29, but I tell you what, you get a lot of rice, and it was a really, really good meal. It certainly made me think about, in my next trip, maybe going to Yak and Yeti for lunch, because the food was excellent, and a really good price. So there's a tip for you. If you're looking for something decent to eat in Animal Kingdom, but you don't want to spend a fortune, Yak and Yeti, $3.29 for chicken fried rice. Really, really well worth doing. We then came back probably about 4 o'clock. And we need to pack because tomorrow we are off to the Disney Cruise Line for a trip aboard the Wonder. And we decided we'd have an evening out and we left our little boy with some of the people we've come away with. And we went over to Port Orleans Riverside for the evening. We thought about eating in boat rides, but we came to Port Orleans for our honeymoon and decided that it was probably much more, there's more memories to just go and eat in the food court. So we went and enjoyed a really good meal in the food court. And also decided we stay and go to the River Roost to enjoy an evening off Yeehaw Bob. went and met Bob beforehand. You'll probably have already heard the interview that we did with Bob, and also enjoyed sort of probably the first hour and a bit of his show. Very, very funny. If you've never been over to Port Orleans Riverside, please go just to go and see Yeehaw Bob. He really is one of the hidden treasures of Walt Disney World. We then got the boat back to downtown Disney and then came straight back to our hotel. Now I'm going to go upstairs, going to go to bed and get ready for tomorrow's cruise.
Thank you once again for joining us on this edition of the show. Thanks, as always, to our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. I usually thank Juz and Craig, and I'm going to thank them once again, even though they weren't on the show, because they were asking about how Mouse Meets was going. Unfortunately, neither one were able to make it in the end, but we certainly did have a great time. Make sure you can to email us your questions, comments, suggestions, concerns, anything at all to disneybrit@hotmail.com. You can also ring our voicemail numbers on 0121 288 2858 from the UK and 407 545 7980 if you're in the US. Make sure to check out our website, disneybrit.com, and also check out our Facebook page and our Disney Brit fan page. Really, please let people know about that. Invite them over there. You can still friend up myself, Juz, and Craig over there. We really are great to say hello and speak to you over on Facebook. We are on there quite a bit. And also, thank you to those who have recently left us a review on iTunes. It is great. People are, you know, using those reviews to see whether they think the show's right for them. And certainly we've had some increased listeners over the past couple of episodes, which is, I'm sure, down to you guys getting the word out. So thank you to you. You can also find our new YouTube channel. Search for Disney Brit Podcast. You can find all the sort of vidcasts we've released over the past few months on there. There are more to come. I can promise you that now. I am currently working on those, so please look out for those to be appearing on there before they're available in the feeds. You can still buy copies of the Minnie Mouse from Amazon in the US and the UK, as well as Waterstones, Borders and WH Smith's, and my book Imagineering the Way, the Unofficial History of the Magic Kingdom, over on lulu.com is now available at a reduced price, so please go over there and have a look at that. You've still got time for Christmas. You can sign up, as I've already mentioned at the beginning of the show, for Mouse Meets, www.mousemeets.co.uk. Get myself completely confused. We have the new website, mousemeets.co.uk. And you can check out our sister podcast at Eye on Orlando. You can go over and see that at ionorlando.com. You can now visit our new forum home. We have our own forum at disneybrit.com/forum. We have a huge amount of numbers of users over there, of members who are really posting some really, really great stuff. And we look forward to seeing you guys over there and talking to you over there as well. Well, that pretty much rounds it up. That leaves me with nothing else to say other than let you know that the next show will be on Wednesday, the 23rd of December, 2 days before Christmas. So until next time, I'll see you.